Well, I ran into a thing once in at Mohegan Sun. I wanted to take, it was early in the morning, and they were just laying out the spread for breakfast in one of the VIP lounges. No one was there. I said, oh, I can get some really good pictures, because if I ever want to talk about the VIP lounge, just have the pictures. And I take a whole bunch of pictures, and all of a sudden, some really worried employee came over. Like, is there something wrong? Did you see something there that's not good? Like, do you want me to get my manager? Is there a problem? There's really no problem. I just take pictures of food.
Right.
She's thinking I saw something bad.
You're about to put something on Instagram that is going to ruin them because there was a fly in the butter or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And she was please tell me, is there something wrong there? We want to correct it. We don't want you to
please don't post
put it. A picture out there. I'm like, no, nothing's wrong. I swear to you, it just looks so nice. You put out the smoked salmon and it's all so clean and nobody's around and it was all so neat.
You haven't given us a chance to fix it and you're just going to pillage us. Hillary up on the internet, what's going on here? Yeah.
And then go to the lounges in the U.S. where there's bugs crawling over and nobody even cares.
Yeah.
So, are you delayed 30 minutes?
What?
London Heathrow, Houston.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wait, think about it. That's IROP gold.
More lounge time.
And there's 10 blocked in business.
So they're oversold, which is why they subbed it.
Yeah. Or it's 10 blocked because they might... No, the inbound's already in the air.
No, it hasn't left yet.
420.
No,
it's 420 there, so it'll be 920, 1020 here.
And they may just be blocking it because that's 50 to 60. That's the difference in case they swap it still. That's the
difference. Oh, okay, so I should watch to see. If they switch it, I'll just go back.
Yeah.
Cancel it.
Well,
you've got time to figure it out.
You have time to figure it out. But you did book it?
I booked it. It's booked. I have a confirmation number.
So, big news from Steven. Booked an alternate flight for his trip home.
We only talked about this ad nauseum yesterday.
Oh, shut up.
The best part about this is the mic's been running for the last couple minutes.
I know.
This is part of the episode.
Leah is very curious.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Steven Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
So, welcome to whatever the next episode number is of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. No, we're not XXX, Foz. It's R-rated on occasion.
XYY?
I kind of like that.
XXY? Who's the actress?
You lost me an actress. I don't...
No.
What kind of movies are you watching?
No, please. Well, what's her name? From Trading Places?
Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yes. Isn't she supposed to have an extra chromosome?
Oh, yeah.
This is one of those things that's been weird lore forever, and maybe true, maybe not, but anywho.
She's doing old people yogurt commercials now, so.
Activia, man. Keeps you regular.
Activia? Yes, but she wasn't doing that in Trading Places, is all I'm saying. Anywho.
This is how we record.
This is how the episodes go, and we're talking. This is obviously Seth Foz and Steven, and we've got Michael Traeger here, who was just telling us an interesting story about Mohegan Sun, you said?
Yeah, we were talking
and
about
so Michael is runs TravelZork.com and big into the gambling gaming side of gaming programs and
gaming loyalty.
Gaming loyalty. And
gaming passenger experience.
And
is it gaming experience?
Gaming experience. And we're sitting in his house, or his apartment in London.
A flat.
A lovely flat.
It's flat.
It's a flat? Okay. His lovely flat. He's got a backyard, but has not put in a grill yet. So, though he's American, he hasn't fully converted the place. And
we saw the fireworks and flag out front.
Yeah. I'm particular about some of
that's how we knew where it was.
Yeah. I'm particular about some things. I got to put the grill in before it really counts. But he's hosting us here, hanging out this afternoon.
Drinking a little bourbon right now.
Yes. He is very much the... historically a Delta fanboy, would you call it, Michael? Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, historically a TWA fanboy. Okay. But I have quite a sweet spot for Delta.
It's to the point that we're drinking our Woodford sitting here. But going back to the gaming thing, in Caesar's Palace...
These are vintage Las Vegas Caesar's Palace glasses that I bought on eBay. I didn't take them from Caesar's Palace.
What a shame.
We have the old version of the Delta stirrers on the glasses.
That's right, and the Delta swizzle stick stirrer things. The triangular sort of heavy-duty plastic. But thanks for having us out, hang out, and experience life in London for a little bit. But B, wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the stuff you're doing on TravelZork, some of how the gaming world sort of overlaps with loyalty, because I think we talk about loyalty in terms of earning points for flying and buying things and this and that, and gaming loyalty is just very, very different, it feels like to me. And maybe I'm completely wrong on that, but it feels a little different. I've read some of the things you've written and trying to keep up with the way you guys play that game. And we're going to use gaming way too many times in this conversation, aren't we?
Yeah, probably.
But trying to keep up with the way you guys play loyalty seems way more complicated to me than like, yeah, then I got an airplane and it worked.
Well, I mean, I think the underlying, the number one underlying theme of loyalty where people think they're more valuable to the company than they actually are is quite consistent between airlines and hotels and casinos. And, I mean,
Wait, you're saying just because I spend hours and hours and hours with you doesn't make me your most valuable customer?
Exactly.
Interesting.
But it's the same, I mean, it's the same kind of, you have exactly a parallel from the Caesar's Diamond people who feel they aren't getting the right love from Caesar's, the same way Delta Diamond people don't feel like they're getting the love from Delta. Mm. You know, changes. You know, maybe Delta Diamonds are complaining about upgrades, you know, that aren't being processed because the upgrade yep. list is too long, or they're selling out first class seats to too many people, you know, buy up programs and things like that. And you see very similar types of things happening in the casino environment. And actually, you know, when you look at it, you know, who are the most valuable customers to the airlines? The people who spend the most money.
Yep.
And that's pretty much so the same way it is in the casinos. The only difference is that obviously the marketing programs don't really want to remind people of that because yep. they still want people to be a part of their programs and feel that the loyalty program is worth it. But in essence, they're still, you know, the truly valuable customers are the customers that are spending the big bucks, or in most cases for casinos, losing the most money.
In the case of the casinos, do you see this shift that we see in the airline business of long-term versus incremental being more important now? So in the airlines, we're seeing this short-term incremental revenue is becoming more important to your perks versus long-term.
It's tough to say sometimes.
That's fair.
Exactly. You definitely see, I mean, one of the things that you definitely see are more fees. The same way airlines are piling on the fees, be it for, you know, purchasing a seat assignment or baggage fees or other things. Casinos are doing the same thing with parking and resort fees. You also are noticing the same kind of trends where those with status can get waivers of resort fees and parking fees, and those with status can get waivers of, you know, luggage baggage fees and seat assignment fees. So you definitely have that area, especially in the casino world. You see the people who still feel loyal to a property but don't have maybe the higher or the mid-tier elite status, they're really feeling abused because now when they used to get, I mean, a big thing with casinos is comp rooms. So you play a certain amount, simplistically, and the casino awards you with free rooms. Well, a free room now, if you don't have, for example, in Caesars, if you don't have diamond status, you still have to pay the resort fee.
Mm.
Well, so now
but your comp room still comes with a resort fee?
Yes.
As a casino comp?
Yes, unless you have status.
That's awesome.
So you can have a $0 room with a $32 resort fee. So it's no longer really a comp room.
It's like a nickel and dime of the status.
Right. Well, unless you have the diamond status, which waives the resort fee. So,
but that's because you had it anyways, because you had status because you were there that much anyways. It's not sort of the one-off, you gambled enough tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the equivalent, you know what the equivalent would be? You have someone who gambles a little bit but only makes platinum status with Caesars, so he gets comp rooms, but he has to pay the resort fee. Whereas he used to get a comp room and not pay the resort fee. Well, maybe that's equivalent to someone who flies on BA somewhat and has bronze status or something and uses Avios to get, you know, an award ticket, but now has to pay for a seat assignment. You know, and doesn't get the seat assignment with the award ticket. So, whereas you used to, when you got an award ticket, you got the seat assignment.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the parking. So from the gambling perspective, what's your view on the parking thing? Because historically, Vegas parking was always free because they had so many people from California driving in.
My take on the parking thing, because I'm a little bit East Coast centric, is they've been charging for parking forever in Atlantic City, so why you guys have a big deal with this?
That's because they don't want your car to get stolen.
In Vegas, you have to come back. Yeah, yeah. We need you to come back next month, so you need to be able to sell your car.
Well, you know, the hysterical thing about Atlantic City is it was so built for day trippers. If you look at, like, the size of properties, and you look at the casino regulations, it'll be like 2,000 hotel rooms and 8,700 parking spaces. But that was always East Coast always charged for parking, and Vegas never charged for parking. I think, you know, parking is pretty similar to the resort fee argument. You know, people are paying it. It's working really well for the properties with incremental revenue. And the players with status are getting those fees waived. So there's very little reason why they're going to discontinue any of that because, quote, the more important people aren't paying it anyway.
So what's your overall feeling then of status at a casino? Is this something you would encourage people if they are gamblers anyway to pursue? Or is it something like, oh, if you're going to gamble enough, it's nice to have?
Well, you know, pretty much so. In the difference with a big difference between casino status and, say, airline status is it's pretty equal. So, like, everyone who's a Delta Diamond pretty much so gets the Delta Diamond benefits. Everyone who's a Caesars Diamond, they sort of have a secret metric behind that. So if you're just baseline, if you just made Diamond, or maybe you matched over to Diamond, you can do the check-in, you'll get access to some of the lounges, but things like suite upgrades and other things like that, all of the diamonds aren't treated the same. Because very similar to like what BA has with customers.
Well, BA does that even within like GGL, which is their top tier, has a dollar segment sort of, or they don't call it dollars, or even pounds, but a value.
I think it's a CIV score. And I think a couple of airlines.
American does it with their Eagle score.
Right. United does, GS has tiers within United.
Yeah.
Which I know because I was GS and was told by someone, yeah, you're GS, but you're not really GS. And I wasn't. I got it as a comp for a focus group I did once. Like, they gave it to a whole bunch of people that clearly didn't really earn it. And I got to be one of them. But.
Well, we did this, we talked about this recently on TravelZork. There's basically a number called your Theo. And all casinos, it's the most important number, which you usually have trouble getting a hold of, just like the CIV scores or other type of scores. And it's actually your theoretical loss. And it's pretty creepy because actually it's really, I mean, it's the number that the casino assumes you're going to lose in
how
a
much
daily
money they
day
of play.
How much money they theoretically think they will win from you on a given day. And that Theo score directly impacts a good number of things to do with your comps. The thing that's different, the biggest differentiation on casino loyalty programs and airline loyalty programs is that airline loyalty programs, like the earning of points, it's relatively linear. Every point you can get is good. Right? It doesn't matter. If the flight's short, if the flight's long, it doesn't really matter. But with casinos, and this is a really tough concept for people to understand because it goes against everything that the casinos will tell you, is you want to think about what you're doing with your player's card and when you're using it or not using it, because that could have some impact potentially on your theoretical score as to what you're...
So there's times when you should be not using the card. Like if I decide if I'm normally playing $100 hands and I get bored and like there's a $5 table over here and whatever, I shouldn't put my card down because it makes me look cheaper. And I'm making up numbers, obviously.
Yeah, but that's sort of that. You have to think about it. You know, the casinos want you to use your card for everything, be it like getting points.
They want full data.
Yeah, exactly. All they want is data on you. But remember, here you're dealing with a system which has more discretionary benefit, which airline systems don't have. So if you are known as a $100 blackjack player, and that's the data that the casino sees, and you just played 12 hours of $100 blackjack, and then, you know, 4 days later, you play 5 hours of $100 blackjack. But now, you know, another day you come in and you play 45 minutes of $10 average, if they'll even rate you at that level, it creates a little bit of a confusing profile for you. Now, I've had arguments both ways on this with people. For me, the number of points that you're going to earn from that are so minimal, it's not worth the risk if it might impact you.
I mean, ideally, from a benefit perspective, when you're going to win, you don't want to use your card. When you're going to lose, use the card.
Yeah, but that you can't necessarily predict.
I was going to say, don't you usually go in thinking you're going to win?
Depends on how realistic you are.
Or you just go in thinking you're going to lose because it's a casino?
But that's a game, right?
Yeah.
It is an interesting, at the end of the day, if you're if you're a big enough player or a consistent enough player that has a relationship with the host, that can override most of these smaller factors. But if you're someone that is sort of wants to hustle a little and really rely on the marketing programs, rely on the free rooms you get online, doesn't want to really rely on a host doing you a favor or something, these things could impact you. So there is a little bit more gameability there, per se, than the airline programs where, you know, that none of that impacts you. Revenue is revenue, you know, mm-hmm. flights are flights. It doesn't really matter.
But, I mean, you say revenue is revenue, but when you talk about things like the Eagle Score, like GS, like some of the GGL types of things, people who buy premium long haul usually are scored higher than people who buy even premium domestic. Back when premium domestic cost a lot of money, it's cheaper now usually, but like, I don't know, I think it might not be quite as different as, you know, we'd like to think it is in some ways.
That's true. And also, you know, the casinos still have a level of discretionary. You just don't always know what the discretionary is. I mean, airlines don't really have that much discretionary.
Certainly less so at the front line, it seems, than I feel like casino folk, you know, the pit boss has way more discretion than a gate agent to do things, kind of. Not gambling wise, but like, oh, if you wanted a sandwich or whatever, that sort of thing, like small little benefits like that, I feel like there's some discretion there. Am I making that up? Am I completely
stupid? Yeah, no, I would say so. You know, I mean, obviously the casinos are extremely data-driven.
Yeah.
And they understand all of this. And the same kind of arguments you hear from people all the time, like, I'm never going to stay at another property because they charge this fee. The same thing you hear with airlines, you hear with casinos. But, you know, obviously they're pretty, you know, they're a couple of people really control the market. So look at Las Vegas. If you cut out Caesars Entertainment and MGM, you don't have a hell of a lot of properties you can stay at on the Strip.
Got Sands, but that's the only other big one. Everything else is small mom and pop shops.
So
how does that work then? So with losses, I mean, you're basically saying the more I lose, the higher of a asset I am to the casinos. How do you balance?
Well, no, not necessarily. That isn't. There are two factors. When I say theoretical loss, that's theoretical loss. So that's based on what the assumption is you're going to lose.
Based on hours played and things like that.
Exactly. So, you know, if a theoretical loss is pretty easy for like a slot machine, you know, because they'll have it set at like five, you know, they'll figure your theoretical loss is 5%. So as much coin in you put in, that's what you're assumed to lose. Sometimes the way they rate you at blackjack or baccarat or other games, they have some variability in the way that they rate you. So that's theoretical loss. So that's pretty much the by the number. Now, of course, this goes back to in the casino world, like Max Rubin, who everybody loves. He wrote a book called Comp City. I mean, basically, if you're playing blackjack and you're spreading your bets and it's still a manual process, they're putting it into a computer, but they're still doing your rating. So if you play 500 hands of blackjack and your rating is really $67 average, but they decide to rate you 130, well,
you win.
You've just, you know, you've released, you know, you've lowered the house edge quite a bit there. And a lot of that has to do with how you, I mean, there are like simple broad strokes with casino things, but it depends how risk adverse you are on some of this. One pit boss is going to be watching multiple tables. And these are things that have been talked about for years that still work. Well, if you're going to go up to a table and you want a decent table average, well, your first couple bets should be on the high end, not on the low end. Because those first couple bets are what they're going to lock into the computer. It's just natural. They're going to put in the computer what you bought in for.
The pit boss comes over because it's check change, and so he watches the first couple hands, and that's what your number is before he walks over to the next person who calls him because someone else sat down.
Right, and now let's also remember, and I hate to be too broad about this, but they're covering a number of tables. Most guys don't want to do too much work. So if they lock you in at a certain average bet, you're either going to have to be consistently lower than that average bet or give them a reason to want to lower that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is broad strokes, you know, sure. I mean, but that kind of thing. So it's better, you know, it's much easier to get rated higher if you're willing to put out higher average bets to begin with. So if you'd really like a $100 rating at the table, and it's a $10 table, probably starting off with the $20 bets is going to mean now you're going to need this pit boss at some point to move you up from 20 to 100. So you're going to have to get his attention. You're going to hope he notices that. You have to hope he decides that he wants to do that. So those are, but, you know, unlike a lot of the things with the airline games or miles and points, you are risky. You know, you have some big bets there. And, you know, variance is not fun, and all kinds of bad things happen. You know, I love playing Baccarat. I recently was playing Baccarat. I'll play usually one or two shoes, which is about average of 70 hands, and Baccarat is as close to a 50-50 game as you can get. I lost at the beginning of one shoe 8 hands in a row. You almost have to work at that.
I was going to say, I'm trying to do the binary. 2 to the 8th is 1024? Like,
it's not pretty. Crazy things happen sometimes, but we're talking about theoretical loss, and then you have actual loss. So, just because, that's always what trips people up. You know, the house edge on that game is only 1% or 1.5%. Yes, if you play into the long term.
Over the long term.
But anything can happen in the short term.
Yeah.
So, and then you have actual loss. And even though the most important part of your rating is your average bet over time for table games, they do take into account, actual monetary losses. That's always a part of the equation if they're decent enough losses.
256, not 1024. I can do math, I swear. It's definitely different than airlines, I think. There's clearly some similarities between the airline and hotel programs and things like that, but there's, I want to say there's more data in the casinos, and maybe that's just because it seems obvious what it is.
But it's more discretionary data. It's what they choose to put in, especially for these hand games.
Yeah.
Right. The airlines are pretty cut and dry as to what's going into the equation.
Yeah, that's fair.
Also,
you still may not know what it is, but they're.
But
there's only so you can't pretend that you're buying first class tickets.
No, you can't fool the system from a $500 fare to be a $15,000 fare.
And there's also more marketing.
Actually, just remember the Guam trip. The Hopper.
That got corrected for me, so I can't.
Oh, yours got fixed?
Yes.
That was the one where United changed. We got a bunch of our reroutes got credited as the.
Some of ours.
Some of the credits, they all went in as like whatever the
full fare.
Theoretical full fare would have been for that trip because we got rebooked after irregular operations, and some of them got clawed back and some didn't. I think that's why I made status that year, is because my PQDs didn't get clawed back. But anyway.
Well, but also casinos do more interesting marketing fishing. Mm. I mean, I would say it would be sort of like how every once in a while you'll wind up with a promotion like Delta will be targeting Seattle, so they'll give like fast track to gold or double or triple miles from a specific market or to specific people. Casinos do a lot more of that kind of targeting based on location, based on people who haven't visited before, based on people who did visit and played more than they would have expected. And you can take advantage of some of that because, at the end of the day, most people don't have that much self-control when it comes to casinos. And my theory on it is, you've earned whatever comps you've gotten, you've earned. If you decide to go and take advantage of a comp and not play that much, that's fine. That might hurt you in the future, but, you've earned it from there. And, organizations, I'll give you a good example, like Caesars, they'll readily, if they notice someone plays a lot in Atlantic City and they live in the Boston area, they'll send you junkets to Reno Tahoe.
Yeah.
And that'll include flights on Southwest and 3 nights at, Harrah's Tahoe and transportation and all of that for 2 people based on your play in Atlantic City. Now, they've got the data on this and they keep doing it over and over. So you've got to imagine that the vast majority of people I know people, you can't pry them away from slot machines. So, they really enjoy this stuff. So they'll do it. But there are others who go and say, hey, there's not the kind of games that I want to play there, or I'm not that interested. I'm going to take advantage of this offer they gave me, and I'm not going to worry about it. Yep. Or maybe I'll play, or maybe I won't play.
I keep getting the offers, not full comp, but like advertising to me I think it's the Biloxi ones with the flights on Allegiant out of central Pennsylvania. As a New York City resident, I keep getting that. I think it's from MGM.
Are you sure it's not Trenton? Because they fly out of Trenton now.
Allegiant does?
Yes.
I've already flown out of Trenton, or into Trenton. I don't need that again.
Are you thinking about doing a junket?
I got to tell you, every now and then I look at it and I'm like, well, to get the line, this is actually a pretty cheap way to go. But I haven't taken them up on the offer yet. It is silly cheap. It's, like $350 return plus including hotel. I have to get myself to,
Central Pennsylvania.
Somewhere in Pennsylvania to get the flight. So it's not great, but it's not awful.
So, you raised an interesting question about, behavior changes. So say you normally gamble when you're on a business trip, so you're solo, but then you get a comp and you bring your family. Do they account for that? to adjust the algorithm to say, well, he's with his family, so he's not going to spend as much money gambling? Or do they just negate that a little bit?
I don't think they ever really account for that. They just sort of look at what your play is for the trip.
So they don't look at behavior changes as much as just your
I would
per trip.
Bet that there's some sort of tracking of, you know, consumer was doing XYZ for this amount of time. We offered a carrot. This is the trip that had that, you know, encouragement applied. How did the behavior change? They may not know the first time around, but they'll know the second and third and fourth time. If you consistently, you know, bring the family and spend more time at the spa and pool than you do at the tables, they might notice over time. Seems like the sort of thing they should be able to pick up on.
Well, they're definitely testing. I mean, there are things for me, because I don't get to Vegas so often. I'll, like, keep waiting, and I'll watch the offers keep going up,
yeah.
You know, like, month after month, until it gets to a certain point, I'm like, oh.
So they found your threshold.
So, five nights in a really nice room, and 1,000 free play, and 300. I'm like, okay, that's seeming like it might be worthwhile to take a trip to Vegas. I mean, that's
they hit your number.
And that's, you know, and I know they're definitely testing those kind of things. But it's interesting. It is sort of interesting. Obviously with the tie-ins with hotel loyalty and other things, I mean, there are lots of tricks that you can use to gain status, especially now if you're in the New York market because of Atlantic City, because Caesars has decided to basically match everything. So you can do different, you know, status matching to different programs to get you status, you know, which can work to your advantage, you know. So
can I match my New York Public Library card to Caesar's status? I didn't ask you about this or warn you about this before, but Borgata joined M Life.
Yes,
this is a thing.
Oh my God, this is like an obsession of Travelzork over the last week. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I haven't been reading much, but I got the email from them advertising it. So is this a good thing or a bad thing? Or just a thing?
It's always a bad thing when you lose a really good independent program.
Okay.
It can be a good thing depending on what your play patterns were. One of the things that works really well for people and why programs like Total Rewards are so popular is because someone who mostly goes to Atlantic City, like every weekend, can, you know, earn, they'll build up their reward credits and comps and be able to easily get comps in Vegas. So they can do their once a year or twice a year trip to Vegas based on their play in Atlantic City or based on their play at another Caesars, you know, Caesars Indiana or another property. So that can be advantageous because Borgata had sort of an arrangement with Boyd, but it was a real loose arrangement. So, and Borgata's immediately started, like, immediately when they did the switchover, you know, when they were doing the pre-switchover, because it's not till June 7th.
Okay.
They immediately sent me, like, rooms at Bellagio. You know, they're trying to say, hey, come stay with us in Vegas. So that could be good for somebody who mostly was a Borgata player, and because they were a Borgata player, they didn't get nice offers for Vegas.
They were isolated. It's the airline that has no partners now all of a sudden has this huge portfolio of partners.
Exactly. Now, the things that we don't understand how they're definitely going to align is M Life has a program where you have the higher tiers are gold, platinum, and noir.
Yeah.
And Borgata had a very simple program. It was like red card, black card, and titanium card. Titanium is a level that would have probably, if you looked at the numbers, been higher than noir. So they're making everyone who's Borgata black, is going to be M Life gold.
Okay.
And M Life gold, let me see if I get this right, is what Hyatt matches to.
Yes.
And Hyatt certainly matches both levels, the global, whatever the hell it is,
global.
And the one under it to gold. They both match to gold. Nobody matches. I think at one point Hyatt was matching diamond to platinum.
Yes.
But they stopped that. Everybody,
they also matched blogger to noir at one point.
Right.
But that's a different sort of problem.
I called it noir light.
Yeah.
I think it was, I think
I'm sure
honestly,
it was, I think it was noir asterisk noir light. I'm sure you got the stuff that was easy to give away, like entrance to clubs and taxi line.
And they got the limos. But, you know, that created a ton of confusion for the bloggers who got noir because we got back to that theoretical, that Theo number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyone who's noir really would have a really high Theo number, and they've got access to all this data. So when someone checks in and they've got, like, no play on their account, and they have no... You see, that's what's different than, like, you check in as a Delta Diamond. They don't... You know, like, say... Okay.
There's no like.
Say you haven't flown Delta in 5 years, and I made you diamond.
Right.
I just made you diamond tomorrow, and you went to check in for a Delta flight. You would seemingly be as valuable as a Delta Diamond as anybody else checking in.
You're in the same position in the queue for the domestic upgrades and things like that.
Right. Whereas when you do something like the Noir, it looks really hokey to the people. He's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, so the person checking you into your room is like, well, I mean, I know I'm supposed to upgrade the Noirs, but you don't deserve it, yeah, kind of thing.
Or yeah. Wait a second, you've never actually gambled.
Or then
a pit boss is looking and they go back and they look at some ratings and they say, you've got a $15 average at blackjack and your Noir? That's impossible. That would mean you have to play blackjack 24 hours a day for 110 days straight.
I mean, it's like, who did you pay off?
Who screwed up? Who made a typo putting this in the system? Yeah. Like, did they hit the wrong key?
Whose family member are you?
Yeah. Someone's nephew.
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of, so they're doing the switchover very interestingly on June 6th. So June 6th is the black hole day at Borgata, in which cannot accumulate any points on... I'm glad they've been so transparent and clear about this. Do not go to Borgata and get any points. You will not get any points in any program on the 6th of June because they're cutting over their system. And hopefully the people handling it aren't Delta or British Airways. Because that's, and then on the 7th...
Or any other airline.
Or any other airline for that.
They all have screwed up plenty.
And then on June 7th, is when you'll... is when you start to accumulate points. So it'll be interesting to see where we're really interested in how the point earnings might change for certain slot machines, video poker machines, table games. Borgata had a super simplistic program where if you earned $1,000 in comps a year, you made Borgata black. I think, and I'm horrible with MG. I have to admit it. I really don't pay much attention, but I think it's 75,000 points for gold or something like that. So obviously they're going to make it correlate. The news that we heard this week, which was from a pretty good source, I heard that they're going to allow the status to stay active. The secondary thing that's really confusing is that M Life's year ends on September 30th. So you end on September 30th, the new year starts on October 1st. Borgata used a rolling year. Yeah. Similar to British Airways, where
whenever you started.
Caesars uses a typical airline kind of
calendar year.
January to December, status is good through January 31st. So we're very curious, and it totally makes sense that they're going to make the Borgata black people, MGM gold, and they're going to allow the status to go through 2018.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been told, which is actually really smart of them to do, because obviously of all the different qualification years, just give everyone a benefit of the doubt.
That's a low cost give overall.
I wonder what the reason is. It has to be fiscal year for them.
For why they do it on September 1st?
Yeah.
We actually asked the M Life people about this at one point during the Hyatt stuff. They basically said New Year's is so big, Christmas, New Year's is such big business time for them.
That we don't want to worry about
rolling things over and breaking it then would be a disaster. So they go for the month between the end of summer.
So
it's after Labor Day, and it's before the Vegas cools off and people start coming, weather-wise, and people start coming back for the winter season. It's actually they don't want to touch anything during the Christmas New Year's time frame.
That's basically a retail operation.
Yeah,
that's when you do stuff in retail is
September, October.
Yeah, there's a lot of businesses we used to do business with IT-wise that after somewhere between November 15th and December 15th was a lockout until January 15th to January 30, depending on how.
Anything financial.
Conservative they were. Yeah.
Anything.
A lot of law firms. Most of it had financial customers, but audits are happening, things are happening, you just don't touch the system.
Well, I deal with a lot of people who they base their fiscal year is off of end of September.
Yeah.
It makes sense, but if you're a computer programmer or you're doing any kind of development, it just completely screws up any kind of math you want to do.
What year is it? Huh?
And there are a few casinos that do crazy 6-month periods and other things. Like Mohegan Sun is known for that. Like Mohegan Sun's year ends on, they have two. You have to qualify twice a year.
I was going to make a terrible joke right there. I'm just going to put that away.
Why?
Because it would be inappropriate.
Figured. I saw the face.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit. Flying, because you do that too.
Yeah, I sort of like it.
That's how we know each other, right?
That's how we know each other.
You and Seth met, and now we're here in your lovely flat.
You fly a lot these days. Obviously, you were in Amsterdam, now you're in London. So you've switched sort of SkyTeam to Oneworld-ish.
Ish.
Transatlantic, favorite product? I'll qualify this by you're mostly Northeast, New England, New York City area. So shorter flights than the West Coast folks. But
right.
I think that makes a difference. It changes what I would pick.
Well, I don't fly Star, so I mean, I can't speak to Lufthansa because it's just not in my market. I happen to think now with the improvements that BA has done at Terminal 5, you know, being someone who lives in London, I think BA personally is the best choice. I also
that's BAF.
I'm sorry.
BA First.
Yeah, as far as, well, BA First or, you know.
Would you put club in the same
category? You know,
I'm putting you on the spot. Well, sorry.
You know, I don't think BA Club really is really any worse than Delta One. I think they're relatively equivalent packages. I mean, I think usually my usual story when we talk about London, originating in London, Delta has the Virgin Clubhouse, which is really nice at T3, and as long as you don't leave the clubhouse and have to go anywhere else at T3, it's pretty good. I think that British Airways, because of the number of nonstop flights, you know, especially I'm talking someone who travels mostly to the States, British Airways is just far more convenient, you know? And of course, a lot of this has to do with bias on cities. You know, I'm flying a lot, quite often to Boston, and you just don't have, you know, the same kind of coverage that you have from British Airways. Like we were saying before, you know, certain days you have 4 flights a day to Boston. You can't touch it. So you basically can fly whenever you want to fly to Boston. So I have a pretty strong bias there. I happen to love 747s. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so I really like 747s. BA has a lot of them. So that's also a really nice perk. First Wing works really well, except this weekend.
Nothing works this weekend.
Yeah, but exactly. So I really think what they've done with First Wing is really good. I think the lounges, even if you weren't flying Club or First, I still think the BA First Lounge is much better than in Amsterdam, the crown room.
Sure.
I mean, the only caveat I would put there is you can't have a cigar before a flight because there's no smoking airside at London Heathrow, whereas all of the KLM lounges have smoking rooms.
I mean, wouldn't you say that the BA regular Gallery's First Lounge is nicer than the Virgin Clubhouse?
I'd say they're pretty equivalent. I mean, I like the terrace. I like the terrace area. I would say they're relatively equivalent. I mean, I think the thing that you gain in the clubhouse is you have the really nice sit down dining area, which isn't exactly, I know they have the dining area in the BA First Lounge, but it's not the same. I mean, the Concorde room would come closer to that. So I would say overall the clubhouse probably wins if you take the Concorde room out of the equation. Not that the Concorde room is that spectacular, but it's still.
But the dining.
I remember being in the clubhouse a few years ago, and after hearing years and years of hype, I was very underwhelmed. Whereas the BA Gallery's First is always consistent. It might not be as over the top, but it's a lounge at the end of the day, right? It's just a pastime.
My experience, I mean, the Virgin Clubhouse is swanky and fun, and I love going and getting, you know, a straight braids or a shave or whatever my, you know, spa choice is that day, but I never was truly in love with it.
Yeah.
And the flow is so good from T5 now to the first class lounge. It's a better flow than the clubhouse. I mean, it's just a better flow because you don't have to go down a hallway and in an elevator or up any stairs. I mean, now at T5, when you use that first wing, you have 2 security stations, which are empty, pretty much so, and then you're walking down a hallway and you're directly in the first lounge. So from a seamless, convenient standpoint, it's great. I mean, that's one thing I have to give BA credit for. Yeah. They've done a really good job with that.
And I know you originate here, so you may not know this. Have they changed the transfer process for BA First, or is it still through the express connections, up the escalator, through security, and then around the loop and back downstairs to the lounge? Do you know?
I believe it's the same.
It's the same, okay.
I believe that's the only thing that they have changed that I didn't realize because we were trying to get out of the Concorde room. They got rid of the Concorde room door.
Oh.
Remember, there used to be a Concorde room door out by expedited security at the far end. You could
so
you could enter the Concorde room without having to go down. So you came out of, like what you were just explaining, you came out of security if you went right.
Yeah,
the Concorde room was right there. If you were going to the first lounge or any of the other lounges, you had to do the escalator down bit.
Through shopping.
That Concorde room door is now permanently closed.
Okay.
And someone was rumoring that, well, they needed to save on staffing, so they didn't need to have, but people were saying who come on transfers, oh, that Concorde room door was super convenient because I could turn right and go into the Concorde room. Now the only way to get through the Concorde room is through the regular first lounge way. So when you use the first wing at T5, you enter through the first lounge, and then you go through the first lounge to the Concorde room.
Oh, nice.
Do you think, so I have an opportunity to fly Delta 1 again on a 767-300.
Can you tell them they should improve their stirrers? Because
would that be Delta 2?
It'd be Delta 2 for me.
God.
Terrible jokes.
Might need more Woodford to tell.
Someone needs to grab the Woodford now.
Put up with their terrible jokes.
Or I have Polaris business with the new seats on a 77W with United.
He doesn't fly Star Alliance.
He doesn't fly Star Alliance.
He hates United.
But I think we should talk about the coffin seats and what you think of these 767 seats. Because I hate them. And it seemed like your general impression was they're pretty terrible.
Yeah, they are. They are pretty terrible. I also don't like the way the table pops up.
Yeah.
I find that is horrible because you can't put your glassware anywhere.
Yep.
And I have an obsession with glassware, so that's the basket. The basket, you can barely put a bottle of water in a basket. It's really tight. I'm not really sure. You've got to pull all the magazines out to maybe slam a...
Well, and they tell you, they're like, hey, put the bottle of water in the thing during takeoff. And it's like, well, how? Because it doesn't fit if I just leave everything in there. And
you didn't find the extra zip ties that are actually hidden away.
Are they Delta 1 branded?
Delta 1 branded zip ties? Only if you approach the cockpit inappropriately.
Those are only used for restraint purposes. Yeah.
If you approach the flight deck, those zip ties will be discovered.
Some pair of branded ones?
Yeah.
But I think I would do the Polaris.
You think so?
Well, actually, my number one is usually I like direct routings. I know that's horrible. I would ever want to get from point A to point
B? It's a connection either way. So.
Oh, it's a double connect on Polaris.
Yeah.
But
you still get home sooner, don't you?
Same time.
Okay.
You leave earlier, but you get...
I leave earlier. Now, here's the key question, guys. I have to do work on the flight. Will the 77W Wi-Fi work?
Delta Wi-Fi is pretty decent.
Exactly.
International.
Delta Wi-Fi International, never had a problem on. Maybe it's because they charge $20-some-odd for it and nobody else is using it, but that's a big thing
to me.
That's good.
I'm probably going to work the entire 10 hours.
I'm actually quite a fan of pricing things so that the right number... If it's something that has to do with that there'll be a degradation of service, if too many people use it, I would rather they charge a higher price so that I can actually use it and it'll work than that they charge a lower price and you get crappy service.
Yep.
And that is one advantage with Delta Wi-Fi. And that's actually a huge disadvantage for Virgin. Because Virgin still has that horrible...
They don't have anything, do they?
Yeah, they have Wi-Fi on the 787s, but it's the same as Singapore, where,
It's L-band. Yeah, that's
100 megabyte for...
It's the old on-air product that's super, super slow. You get, 500 kilobits per second to the plane.
Everybody funneled through.
Are pigeons just carrying it back and forth?
Yeah, well, the problem is you're flying at such altitude that, sometimes the pigeons don't get up there. And so,
that's packet loss.
Packet loss.
It actually is so...
We are such dorks.
Yeah. I'm glad we could make that joke, though. I mean, it was totally worth it.
I'm worried that we said it in unison. Anyways.
One Woodford Inn, and this is where we're at.
Well, there's also the beer and the couple, and the Limbrisco and the red wine.
That's true.
Yeah, whatever.
But I think I'm pretty satisfied with British Airways overall. I also think, as far as, quote, gameability, I mean, BA Gold has no spend requirement.
Yeah.
Tier points, right?
Tier points.
Yeah.
But that's long haul.
That's extremely gameable. I mean...
Especially if you're willing to go to the United States every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, there's other... And Qatar fares.
Yeah.
And other kinds of... Especially from Europe... they have some crazy fares that earn a lot of tier points, and you don't have to spend. And
to be fair, you can game the spend on American the same way.
That's true.
I collect using BA and Qatar premium fares, and
but you still have to worry about it.
I have to account for it, certainly. Yeah.
I mean, you still have, but you still add that level of complexity where you need the spend and the qualifying miles. So you have to, you're accounting for two things.
Two columns.
Exactly. Whereas with BA, you just don't have to worry about it, And it's actually possible to do that with Gold Guest List if you're psychotic and want to fly enough.
I want to say there was back when, I think when GGL came out was also when they did Lifetime Gold was announced, maybe. I want to say, I feel like we talked about this on the show at one point. There were Vegas San Juan runs.
Yep.
In first class, where I think we calculated if you flew like 70 or 80 days, just back and forth.
You get GGL.
Was it GGL or was it Gold for Life?
Might have been Gold for Life at that point.
Gold for Life, I think, is what, 35,000 now.
Yeah, it was somehow
and
that.
And GGL for Life is 65,000.
I don't know. It was something like that round trip was 500 or 700 points or something like that, and you could do it for, like, we did the math on this at one point. I have to go back and listen to that episode, but it was like, huh, I mean, it would suck, but it's not that bad, which immediately was a problem.
And if you want to meet some of these crazy people, I started the BA Gold group on Facebook. So there's a bunch of them there, which is actually another funny story because I, you know, the first thing I did, the Delta Diamond group was extremely social on Facebook. So I was like, oh, this is sort of fun. There must be a BA Gold group like this, right? Because there's been this cool Delta Diamond. And I asked a couple other bloggers and other people like, nope, never heard. Nope, there isn't one. There isn't one. And there's the AA Executive Platinum group. I'm like, okay, I'll just start one. And it was the funniest thing about it is I kept it really, I keep it pretty locked down because we're trying, we don't really want people coming on and complaining about buying a board intro Europe because it gets old after the 437th time someone's complained about that.
You don't say.
Really?
But what was funny is within hours of me setting up this group and like mentioning it to no one, all of a sudden there was a thread on Flyer Talk. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. I will say the group turned out to be useful to me coming over here. I was at JFK sitting in the business class lounge, galleries, whatever, and someone else from the group was in the first class lounge, or in the Concord room.
Okay.
And he came over to say hi. I was like standing, I stood up and was getting my bags. I was going to go out and get some food because I wasn't flying club, so I didn't get the, you know, pre-flight dining. So I was headed downstairs to, you know, pick through the debacle that is concessions in T7. As I'm walking by, I hear someone say, Seth? I turn, I'm like, hey, how's it going? He's like, you know, so it was actually very nice. We got to sit and chat.
It's a good
group of people so far to me.
It's good. I mean, I wouldn't say that we do extreme vetting, but we do enough where we make sure that we're just not allowing the floodgates of people in. But it's been sort of a fun little experiment.
So if you want in, give a shout. If you've been denied so far, now you know who to blame.
So I assume you didn't let anyone into the group this weekend.
Yeah, we're keeping it pretty, but actually the group's been pretty useful about things that are going on.
There's been a bunch of people who have been at Heathrow being able to provide sort of updates to the others about this is what they're saying, this is what's going on.
It is the power of like the way things are shifting somewhat.
The theory of how social media was supposed to work at some level. But all right, if we've been talking too long and the glasses are empty, so I'm going to call it. Michael, if people want to find you on the interwebs at various places, where should they go?
They should go to travelzork.com. Okay. Because that's where you'll mostly find me, and you'll find us pontificating about all things casino, and we throw in a little bit of airline stuff every once in a while.
And on other Twitter, there's
also at Travelzork on Twitter, at Travelzork on Instagram, I think.
There's at Travelzork on Instagram, and my personal Twitter is Baccarat_guy, because I'm obsessed with Baccarat, but we don't have any time.
I still don't understand that game other than, like,
It's like Mahjong to me. It's like, well, it's fun to watch.
Yeah. Awesome. And you can find, obviously, the Dots Lines Destinations podcast at Dots Lines on Twitter, moredotsmorelines.com. Hit up us up on Patreon if you're feeling that way. Leave us a review on iTunes. Have a great trip. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.